This is the State of Things from the Upstage Cabaret in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. Thank you. Nearly 1,000 people rallied here in Greensboro on Sunday to protest a controversial new law passed by the General Assembly. The demonstrators added their voices to a growing chorus of opposition to HB 2, or the bathroom bill. The new law, passed by the General Assembly and signed by Governor McCrory, hinders the ability of municipalities to prevent discrimination. Almost 100 CEOs across the country have criticized the measure, with some suggesting it will affect their business plans in North Carolina. Some of those effects have already been felt. And some cities are passing resolutions in opposition to the law. Greensboro City Council meets tonight to consider such a resolution. Businesses in the Triad have weighed in on the measure. What effect will that law have on the state's industries? Here in the Triad, many are concerned about the effect on the upcoming High Point furniture market. Joining me now are two members of the Greensboro News and Record staff. Alan Johnson is News and Record editorial page editor. Welcome back, Alan. Good to have you here.
Good to be here.
And Joe Killian is a reporter for the News and Record. Welcome back, Joe.
Thanks.
What are some of the questions? You know, there was some debate about whether or not it would have any impact on cities. The governor tried to set the record straight by saying it would not. Since then, we have learned it will. Do we know what's happening here in Greensboro in terms of legislation?
Yeah, well, Greensboro's in an interesting situation because more than a year before the Charlotte thing came up, we passed a series of ordinance changes in Greensboro that made us one of the most progressive cities on this issue in North Carolina and in the South. We had a housing ordinance that protected lesbian, bisexual, gay, and transgender people. Now, unfortunately, HUD didn't do what it needed to do to change its policies, so that's a little toothless, but we have non-discrimination in place for all city employees, for instance. And in Greensboro, it is going to change some stuff. The non-discrimination ordinance that we have in place for city employees isn't going to change. But for instance, the city contracts with a great number of companies and individuals, and we cannot hold those people to the same non-discrimination standards as city employees. That will have changed. Also, the law takes away the ability of our Human Relations Commission to deal with discrimination against anyone, not just gay and lesbian and transgender people.
So it will have an effect. And of course, that was the interesting thing. We were told that this special session and hurry up on passing the law was important to protect safety in bathrooms. And then this other legislation about job discrimination, which also gets sort of shooed in.
Yeah, if you actually look at the bill itself, the bathroom portion that deals with Charlotte's ordinance is very small. It's a small amount of text and it has a small impact as compared to the rest of the bill, which creates a statewide non-discrimination rule that leaves out all lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. And then, as you said, there are some wage things. And now if you're going to sue for employment discrimination, you have to go to the federal level rather than the state. That's for everybody. It's more expensive, time-consuming, complicated.
So tell us about the rally this past weekend.
Yeah, there was a rally held here at the College Park Baptist Church, and more than 1,000 people showed up, and Mayor Nancy Vaughn spoke, Mitchell Gold, a big furniture magnate, spoke, businesses and religious leaders are sort of all on the same page, mostly on the same page in this city. Right. On that, and it seems to be that way across the state.
Alan, you were at that rally, and you talked about the diversity of, first of all, 1,000 people. That's a lot of people to show up for a rally, a protest rally.
It was an amazing thing to see. First of all, my first impression was, and I blogged about this morning, is we're going to need a bigger church. I had to sit on the floor in the balcony. I had to find a spot, and there were lots of people sitting in the floor. There were lots of people in the aisles. There were lots of people in the doorway. Ways. And I was really taken by how diverse this audience was. There were people with gray hair. There were people with no hair. There were young families. There were straight people. There were gay and lesbian people. There were Christians. There were Jews and probably some other religions and faiths represented. And I was also taken by the fact that there are a number of African Americans there. Now, the African American community has been particularly conservative and slow to evolve in attitudes on gay and lesbian and transgender issues. But it was the NAACP had a representative there who spoke very forcefully. And so I was really just amazed at how many people turned out and how much passion you could feel in that room among those people.
Well, of course, the Reverend William Barber, head of the North Carolina chapter of the NAACP, broke some of that new ground in his opposition to Amendment 1.
That's
true.
He
was pretty much all alone back then. But what you're saying is there might be growing support and a growing alliance, unexpected alliances now, over this issue.
I think that people are seeing how these things are connected. And I think people are realizing that an affront to anybody's human rights is an affront to everybody's human rights. And so I think that's registering with people. And I think people are seeing through some of what seems to be a very shallow way of thinking. And they're also, even if you agree with the precepts of any part of this bill, you'd have to raise questions about the process. You rush this thing through, you get the thing signed in 15 hours. Lawmakers barely have time to read the thing, and obviously they had very little time to read it because they don't know what's in it. The governor didn't know what was in it.
The governor didn't know, right.
The governor came to Greensboro the next day, and we did an interview with him, and I was asking him about that. And the first thing I asked the governor about, I said, well, you know, when Greensboro had this problem with the city council, remake law, this HB 263, if you want to call it SB 36. We know it by both, very all too intimately.
Now, this was a law that changed the way the city council, the structure
right.
of the city council in Greensboro. So you've got the state legislature telling Greensboro how to structure its city council.
And I reminded the governor, I said, well, Governor McCrory, you called me. I didn't call you. You called me and you told me you thought the state ought not to be interfering in the affairs of cities and counties. And I reminded him of that, and he said, well, this is different. This is safety. This is an emergency. We got to do this right away. You would think that there was a barbarian horde at the door or something, the way he talked about this. And remember, the law in Charlotte, the ordinance in Charlotte was to go in effect on April 1st. So that meant at that time he had 9 days. Mm-hmm. And you would have thought he had only a few hours. I kept picturing Kiefer Sutherland in 24 and the clock's ticking. He's got to do something to protect God and country or everything's going to fall apart.
Well, and job discrimination, again, has nothing to do with the bathroom. And that was
right.
part of this law. So which is leading to the suspicion and some of the opposition that there were more cynical motives involved. So what are you seeing in terms of popular or, you know, public reaction to this? There's been a kind of a change in the trajectory from initial reaction to what happens over time. Is that right?
Well, I think of this in personal terms, and I've seen other people think of it the same way. In our editorial board meetings at the News and Record, we were talking about what was going on in Charlotte early on because they had two separate votes on this. In one vote, they didn't pass it. Another vote, they did later after the city council election, and they had a new city council. And when this whole restroom thing came up, I didn't know how I felt about it. It was something I never thought about. And initially I thought, I was telling my colleague Doug Clark, I don't know. Yeah, that sounds kind of creepy. I'm not quite sure where I am on this. The more I learned about it and the more I understood the thinking behind it, it made common sense that to prevent people from being harassed, to respect people's differences, but also to do something that's least obtrusive, it would seem to me that it made sense.
The Charlotte Ordinance made sense.
That the Charlotte Ordinance made sense. I also asked myself the question during these discussions, well, do you really have to force this issue? Do you have to do it now? Couldn't you just leave this alone and just let it evolve? And then I started comparing that to civil rights and to racial equality and the issues that we've had to fight over the years. And I thought, yeah, I've heard people say, well, can't you just wait?
Mm-hmm.
Can't you just let this, you know, give us some more time? We're not ready yet. It reminded me of Atticus Finch and the Go Set a Watchman, the new Atticus Finch, and saying, yeah, you know, they're not quite ready for this yet. They just need to pipe down and let things happen. So I think maybe forcing the issue in the long run will make people think a little bit more about this. And I've seen people who were like me say, well, wait a minute. The more I think about this, do you want someone, you know, then that's only the bathroom part. And then you also had people thinking about all these things they larded on to the bill and thinking, well, wait a minute, why are they doing this and to what purpose?
Joe Killian, the Greensboro City Council, has been thinking about it and might act tonight. Tell us about what's on.
Yeah, the Greensboro City Council is considering a resolution officially opposing HB2 tonight, and my head count has got almost everybody voting for it. City Council's lone Republican, Tony Wilkins, told me yesterday he's still on the fence about it. So we could see unanimous support for that opposition.
All right. Well, I want to thank you both for being on the program. Joe Killian, News and Record reporter, and Alan Johnson, News and Record editorial page editor. Thank you so much for being on the State of Things. Just ahead, bars, blues, and booze. We're going to hear stories of blues musicians and bar owners. And right now, you're going to hear some of that music from two local blues artists, David Bolton and Logie Meacham. Logie Meacham is going to be here on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. We'll be right back.
If I had my way, if I had my way, if I had my way, I would tear this whole building down. You heard about Samson, heard about his birth, you heard he was the strongest man on earth. One day while Samson was walking along, he reached down and picked up an old jawbone. Well, he raised that bone above his head. When he stopped moving, 10,000 was dead law. If I had my way, if I had my way, if I had my way, I would tear this whole building down. Heard about Delilah, so sweet and fair. She had good looks, Lord knows, and long black hair. She went, sat down on Samson's knee. Said, tell me where your strength lies, if you please. If you shave my head, clean as my hand, my strength come natural like any other man. Lord, if I had my way, if I had my way, if I had my way, I would tear this whole building down.